I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Michelle Citrin, Jewish singer-songwriter. We'll also have visits from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, our Mavena on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our new Maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Hanukkah is nearly here, beginning in just 7 hours or so when it gets dark tonight. First of 8 nights of this very enjoyable festival of lights, latkes, friends, family, and song. Each night of Hanukkah, we light the Hanukkah menorah, the 9-branched candelabrum symbolizing the rededication of the temple in Jerusalem back in 165 BCE. We'll celebrate the victory of the Jewish rebels under the Maccabees, who defeated a powerful enemy army, recaptured Israel from pagans, and protected religious freedom in Israel. According to the wonderful story of the miracle of the oil, a small vessel of pure olive oil needed to light the menorah in the temple daily lasted not just one day, but the full 8 days necessary to produce more pure oil. To celebrate this miracle, we eat anything fried. Well, not anything. Anything kosher fried in oil over the course of Hanukkah, a kind of culinary celebration of history. Hanukkah is definitely a historical holiday based on actual events dating back to the 2nd century BCE. Believe it or not, being nearly 2,200 years old makes Hanukkah one of the more recent Jewish holidays, we Jews have been around for a long time, and puts its origins squarely in a period in which we have quite a lot of historical corroboration for the events it describes. Unlike some periods in history, from the time of the Maccabees, there are more or less contemporary chronicles that survive, a lot of archaeological records and many ruins, lots of coins, and a pretty clear picture of what was going on in Israel at the time. We know that it was a period when Jews were experiencing both the benefits and challenges of being exposed to a sophisticated Greek civilization. Assimilation was all the rage for young Jews who liked the wealth, the entertainment, theater, both comic and tragic, art, sculpture, music, sporting events, popular speakers, dance, and the emphasis on physical fitness and beauty that were the hallmarks of Hellenistic culture. In many ways, the Hasmonean period, the time of the Maccabees, was similar to our own. In fact, Jewish community centers, the JCCs of today, are quite similar to the Greek experience of the world in that era, not the Jewish culture of the period. An uneasy relationship existed between the older Jewish religious culture, based in the ritual and moral structure of belief in one God and the practice of Judaism, and the Greek athletic, entertainment, intellectual lifestyle. There was tension, but there was coexistence. That changed when a Greek king ruling from Syria named Antiochus IV decided to proclaim himself a god. This was not unusual in the ancient world. If it was good to be a king, it was even better to be a god. The difference was that this particular king decided his own statues had to be erected in every religious site in his extensive empire. Therein lay the problem. It was rather like naming every big building you erect, every casino you start, every hotel you buy, every country club you commission after yourself. But instead of Trump Tower or Trump Hotels or Trump Estates or the Trump Golf Courses, it would be Antiochus Temple, Antiochus Square, Antiochus Fortress, Antiochus Gymnasium. The only difference is that all the people were required to bow down and bring offerings to the great statue of Trump, Antiochus, demonstrating his divinity. They could keep worshiping their old gods, of course, but they had to worship Trump, I mean Antiochus, too. For pagans who had an entire pantheon of gods, like the list of candidates for president today, this presented no conflict. They would just worship one more. Antiochus, plus Zeus or Baal or Dagon or El or whoever else they worshipped. But for Jews who believed that there is only one God and that worship must remain exclusive, this was a huge issue. When the Greeks put up Antiochus' statue in the Holy Temple in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount and began to sacrifice unkosher animals like pigs to it, this was too much. In 165 BCE, a small group of Jews, led by a priestly family named the Hasmoneans, started a rebellion. It's called the Maccabean Revolt. At first, it was a guerrilla war led by their elder, Mattathias, the origin of the name Matthew, by the way, and then by his son Judah. It took a couple of years, but eventually the Maccabees prevailed, retook the country, and recaptured Jerusalem. They cleansed the temple, re-erected the golden menorah, and relit the lamps in this darkest period of the year, and they established an 8-day holiday of thanksgiving for the victory of the few over the many, the weak over the strong, the holy over the profane, the righteous over the wicked. There is more to the story. In Judaism, there's always more to the story, but this much is clear. Without the events of Hanukkah, the Maccabees' courage in fighting the greatest military power of the era, defeating it, and preserving our right to pray and worship as we desired, monotheism would have disappeared. There'd be no Judaism today, also no Christianity, and no Islam. Hanukkah is a holiday celebrating not only miraculous redemption, but religious freedom, something so precious it's worth fighting to preserve at any time. In that, it commemorates a value that is not only Jewish, but American as well. Freedom of conscience, the right to believe and practice as we desire. Those are great values in any era. As we complete our pre-Hanukkah musical preview, and to play us in this morning, here's our guest Michelle Citrin's charming little tongue-in-cheek Hanukkah song, Hanukkah Loving.
A little Hanukkah loving is what I need tonight. Light a menorah and the moment is right. Heating up the oil for the latkes to fry. Shredding onions in a bowl. Oh no, I begin to cry. My makeup starts to run down my face. The oil is crackling all over the place. But strong as a Maccabee is sweeping to the room. Coming to my rescue with a wet towel and a broom. We'll smell of oil together tonight as we celebrate this festival of light. My latkes don't get cold when you're nearby. And when I sing the blessings off key, I'm less shy. I'll wipe the jelly from the corner of your lip as you proudly spin the dreidel on its tip. And after too many bags of Hanukkah gelt, we decide that it's alright to loosen our belts. 'Cause in the window you can only see a glow. All the color candles burning down real low. Our silhouettes are swaying at a lover's pace.
That was Michelle Citrin's Hanukkah Lovin' for the coming Festival of Hanukkah, which begins tonight. 8 crazy nights of candles, joy, lovin', and latkes. Celebrate every night of Hanukkah, but especially a week from now at Temple Emmanuel at our greatest Hanukkah on Earth celebration, Making Miracles. It'll be Sunday, December 13th at 4:30 p.m., the largest Hanukkah celebration in all of Arizona. It's free and open to all. Meet Michelle Citrin, who is funny, energetic, and very charming, when we come back in just a few moments here on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998 and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Hi, I'm Ben, a student at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can provide Jewish education to families at no cost to you. Direct your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, and help make great Jewish education affordable. Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. JETCO gives scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K-8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction. When you give to JETCO, you get a 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income tax is reduced by the exact amount you've given. You can give up to $1,067 for a single filer and $2,134 for a married couple. You get that whole amount back from your state income tax. Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442, or go to JETCO.org. You can even choose a future date to process your payment. How cool is that? Make a tax credit contribution to JETCO and build Jewish identity in Tucson for generations of students. And it won't cost you a dime.
Our guest this morning, Michelle Citrin, achieved celebrity status first for her fabulous song about what to do with leftover matzah after Passover.
Passover's over, and wouldn't it be neat if you could use all the matzah that you didn't eat? Catch it like a frisbee with your friends in the park, or you could jump in the water and pretend you're a shark. You can make a matzah big and play the guitar, and you can make a matzah license plate for your car. Use it as a coaster when you're drinking your beer, or you can throw it as
insulate. But there is much more to Michelle Citrin than one cute song.
We are delighted to welcome one of the really talented young performers on the Jewish music scene, Michelle Citrin, who I was introduced to because of her fantastic song about what to do with matzah after Pesach, which is something I've always wondered about since I ate matzah.
Oh!
But it's not Pesach. Sorry, this is a confessional time. Although anybody who's listened to Two Jewish knows that I hate matzah.
Wow.
But I love your music. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you. And that was a very telling introduction. I'm just here to help. I'm just here to offer solutions in life. Just here to heal the world, really.
Yeah. So we hear the word, we heal the world.
Yeah.
One tune at a time, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us what got you into the kind of music you're doing now.
Oh, you know, the kind of music I'm doing now is really the culmination of all these different pieces of me, the fragments of self that I thought had to be separated, and I didn't actually know there was space to be complete and whole, and I can just have all those pieces be together. And those pieces are the spiritual side of me, the Jewish identity side of me, the folk side of me, the funky, soulful pop side of me. And truly, it all came together. You know, it's a lifelong journey, but I would say that, you know, being in the Havana Shira community, which is a song leader community, and being introduced to that world of Debbie Friedman and seeing, oh, this is like a Jewish Joan Baez. She's got it. She figured this out. And then I started meeting more and more people who just really embraced all parts of who they were and didn't have to separate it. And I just was taken by it and supported and warm welcome. And that really, really helped me be where I am today.
Now, you have an interesting Jewish background. Your grandfather was an Orthodox Baal Tefillah, kind of a non-professional cantor. You grew up conservative. Now you're popular across all the Jewish spectrum. Is all of that part of your music?
Absolutely. Everything of the story of where I'm coming from. It's all weaved together. I grew up, the first song I ever learned was sitting at a piano. I was about 3 years old with my grandmother, who learned music from her aunt, and this was in Romania, okay? So I have all these Holocaust survivors as grandparents, four Holocaust survivors, and they taught me their heritage, their identity through music. So my first song, sitting with my grandma at the piano, was Chag Purim. I mean, that's my memory of music. So basically for me, music and expression and Jewish identity is all just like inseparable. You know, it's just such a big part of the Jewish experience and the musical experience. And those are my earliest influences, you know. And growing up in an Israeli household, my mom was born in Israel. So I have like Ofra Chaza, we have Kol Nidre, we have the Indigo Girls, and, you know, you name it. And that's what's so cool is, you know, becoming... looking back as an adult and just seeing how all the dots start to connect, and it's exciting. It's really exciting.
We will talk much more with Michelle Citrin when we come back here on Too Jewish, and maybe about the very eclectic nature of Jewish contemporary music too. We'll be back soon.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco. People don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from FlavorArt in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Thank Always you. A pleasure.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award in 2016, please go to kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N, award.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com, T-O-O, Jewish Radio. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts to which you can subscribe. We welcome our Mivinan, Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
We've been talking about the Israeli economy, which is a complicated mess if you're an American looking at it. So when you walk into a bank in Israel, unlike America, instead of you give them money and they pay you a little bit of interest, in Israel, they charge you for everything.
Everything. Did I tell you about the line fee? Line fee.
What's a line fee?
Like for every line that you have on your monthly report, if you withdraw money, if you even deposit money, you pay for it.
You pay
for
to put money
everything.
Into your
and this is because there is less of competition between the four or five biggest banks, and they, you know, they're kind of a cartel.
Collusion.
Yeah, because they, you know, whenever Bank Leumi coming with a new, very exciting fee, the other banks will automatically do the same, or they're doing this on the same morning.
They all charge you extra for something on the same day. Yep.
So there is no competition. There is no reason for you to go to other banks. So they can charge you forever how much they want.
It's crazy. And part of that is, I can understand why Israeli consumers feel exploited, because at every turn, there's extra fees, there's extra charges.
They bribe you with the amazing loan, and you take another loan because you can be, you know, overdraft in Israel. It's not a curse. You can.
So
you know.
Explain how overdraft works, because I had this explained to me in like 1976 when I was 15 years old, and it didn't make sense then, and it doesn't make sense to me now as an American.
A person can earn like 5, 7, 8,000 shekels a month, and he can get another $50,000 credit. So he can be, yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. Because the bank will allow him, you know, for a very modest interest, like 12% or something ridiculous like this. No, I don't want to say percentage. Maybe I don't want anyone
to... Who knows what it is right now. But
yeah. But it's ridiculous, you know. And if you can't, like, if someone really only earns $7,000 and $8,000, no one will give him 2%. They probably
right,
would
give
be
them
five,
a high,
six,
high
and
rate.
Yeah. So and then it's like kind of a loop. Because
you're stuck. You're
yeah,
working for the company
and
store,
and there is no way that $6,000, yeah, 6,000 shekel will be enough for you, and because you already, you know, you raise the bars, you know.
Right, so now you have to pay off the interest on what you've already taken in overdraft.
Nahon.
So it's like an equity loan without any equity.
Nahon.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this is common. Like,
it's so common.
Like almost
it's so
every
yeah.
Israeli I knew had overdraft, and they didn't think about it very much.
Yeah. They're still laughing.
Still laughing. It's kind of what Americans do with credit cards, only eventually, you know, the bill comes due and you have to do something about it. But in Israel, it never comes due? Not yet.
Not yet.
Odlo.
Let's talk in 10 years.
Okay. Hopefully we'll talk about happier subjects
yes.
next time. Thanks, Oshrat. We'll talk next week.
Bye.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Gero Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been surveying the kosher wine scene around the world. You talked, of course, about the extraordinary viticulture of France and Italy last time, and the fact that there are kosher wines of distinction in both those places. Now let's cover, and you mentioned also, I think, Spain, which has some fine wines. I don't know too many kosher ones, but...
Some, and Hungary.
And Hungary,
right.
Which I know has some good kosher wines, tend towards the sweet side of things. Where else can people find really great kosher wines?
So pretty much all the great wine-producing regions of the world, with very few exceptions, now make at least some kosher wines because they recognize the importance in the global market, if not necessarily the domestic market. So I mean, let's start with our hemisphere. Obviously, California produces a great number of kosher wines.
And some really fine ones, I might add.
Yeah, although my bias is that the Willamette Valley in Oregon produces the best wines in the whole hemisphere, and they don't produce a great number of kosher wines because most of their wine sales are regional, which is to say the Pacific Northwest, like right. Oregon, Washington State, maybe British Columbia, maybe Idaho, but not, they don't even send a lot of wine to the East Coast. So the Jewish population in the Pacific Northwest is relatively small and mostly not Orthodox, so they don't really care about getting local kosher wine. So the number of kosher wineries in Washington State and Oregon is tiny, unfortunately, because they really do produce the best wines of the hemisphere. By contrast, in Argentina and Chile...
I just still have to say, as a Californian who lived in wine country for a long time, I respect your opinion without necessarily fully agreeing with it.
Yeah, I'm just not sold because there's a French concept called rapport qualité-prix, which means the relationship between the quality and the price. And yes, for $100, you can get a bottle of California wine that's every bit as good as a $20 bottle of Oregon wine. But why would you want to spend five times the money? That's the problem.
I understand.
It's the rapport qualité-prix. It's not ultimately the quality.
I think it's also a Jewish concept, but let's go on.
Okay. So both Argentina and Chile produce a lot of wine, some of which is very good, and much of which is kosher. So it's easy to find kosher wines from South America. Obviously, it's easy to find kosher wines from Israel, although your listeners might find it surprising that a great number of wineries in Israel do not produce kosher wine. So that people, whether in Israel or outside of Israel, who care about such things, and that number is shrinking, cannot automatically assume that every bottle of wine produced in Israel is kosher.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah. Finally, the so-called New World wines, Australia and New Zealand. I'm not sure about New Zealand because it has such a tiny Jewish community and not much of its wine gets exported. But Australia certainly produces a lot of kosher wine.
And some really fine ones, am I?
And it is a major wine producer and becoming more important every year. So I think every wine region that does a lot of exports is more and more concentrating on the kosher market because they pay whatever they pay, but it's a fixed cost to have a rabbi put his signature on the label, and then you know, that's that.
Well, I can say that the choices are terrific, and if anybody is still drinking Manischewitz, it's on them.
Well, it's a matter of taste or habit or childhood, whatever. I know a lot of people who drink Manischewitz or Mogen David for Kiddush, and then some other kind of kosher wine with the meal.
Well, Chaim, thanks, Tom.
Look forward to next week.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Boker Tov.
Boker Or. It's going to be Chag Urim, the Holiday of Lights tonight,
yes.
Hanukkah.
Very exciting time of year for great Jewish boys and girls.
Absolutely.
Great. And the adults, too.
Well, especially. I think it's a great adult holiday. I wish people understood how much fun it is for grown-ups. But we tend to think about Hanukkah as fun, but it's also got a very important educational part to it.
Absolutely. And, you know, like so many of the Jewish holidays, it's an opportunity for learning. Every time we celebrate a holiday together, we're commemorating or we're memorializing or we're celebrating with joy or sorrow, something that's important in Jewish history. And Hanukkah is a great example of that.
Now, Hanukkah, actually, the word means dedication, but chinuch in Hebrew, is the same word, means education. So, like, this is a perfect holiday for you.
Beautiful. And, you know, there's everything included with Hanukkah. You've got your basic math of adding a candle a night and which direction you're lighting the menorah. That breeds questions with kids.
Base 8, actually.
That's right. And on top of that, you've got latkes and the use of oil. So they're, you know, why are we using oil? What's the oil all about? Oh, well, that reminds us of the miracle of finding the one vessel of oil that lasted for 8 days in the ancient days. So there are so many facets of Hanukkah that just really beg the question for what are we doing here, Mom and Dad?
Yeah, and you know, when you think about teaching history, I can't think of a... I love history. I know it's an illness, but I really do love history. It seems to me there's not a better historical way of teaching about the conflict of civilizations than Hanukkah.
Sure, sure. And Hanukkah is one of several Jewish holidays that really speak to the importance of religious freedom and the freedom to worship as we want as Jews, and the partnership that we have with Hashem in celebrating who we are as Jewish people. So learning about the historical elements of that time. Why are we using olive oil? Why are we celebrating freedom? Who are we celebrating freedom from? What was going on? You know, why were we not allowed to be Jews in a Jewish land?
And not allowed to teach. I think about, you know, how important that was for the Greeks to stop Jews from teaching Torah.
Right. And you know, playing the game of dreidel, we get a little bit of letters. There's a little bit of Olivet education there. But there's also the whole notion of why were we playing dreidel? Well, that was a ruse, right? I mean, the tradition tells us that during educational settings, when the bad guys, quote-unquote, showed up to take a look at what was going on, we pretended we were playing the dreidel game. So there's another great learning opportunity there.
It's like a secret way of teaching. Only Jews would have to have secret ways to teach.
It's great because it's subtle. It has the nuance of this joyful celebration, which is very genuine. And we're lighting candles, which is a very organic, warm, familial thing to do. And so you have the setting that is already set in joy, but has such a great opportunity for also education and enriching an understanding of our culture.
Well, Chag Orim Sameach, Chag Chanukah Sameach.
Chag Sameach to you and yours.
And we'll talk next week when it will definitely still be Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody.
When we come back here on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is set for May 29th to June 9th of 2016. If you're interested in going on this fabulous journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, email tojewishradio18@gmail.com, TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or call 520-327-4501 for more information and the itinerary. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A woman walks into the post office to buy stamps for her Hanukkah cards. She says to the clerk, "May I have 50 Hanukkah stamps, please?" "What denomination?" asks the post office clerk. And the woman answers, "Oy vey, my God, has it come to this? Okay, give me 6 Orthodox, 12 Conservative, and 32 Reform stamps." You see, denomination could mean the cost of the stamps or the division of Judaism. Anyway, that was our old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. In this week's portion of Miketz, we are in the midst of the fabulous story of Joseph, shorn now of his technicolor dream coat and locked away in an Egyptian prison. Dreams play a central role, not for the first time in Genesis, not for the first time in the Joseph story. In Miketz, Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, dreams a famous dream. Seven fat cows emerge from the Nile. They are eaten then by seven skinny cows that also emerge from the Nile River. Then seven fat ears of grain are devoured by seven lean ears of grain. The Pharaoh wakes up puzzled and disturbed. What does it all mean? None of the Egyptian king's brilliant advisors and counselors can help him. In desperation, he turns to a forgotten Hebrew prisoner who once helped the chief wine steward, that is, Pharaoh's bartender, when he was in jail with him. It is Joseph, the Hebrew slave, long forgotten. Joseph is dragged from prison, cleaned up, brought to the Pharaoh, perhaps the most powerful man in the world at the time. Joseph hears the Pharaoh's dreams and correctly interprets them as prophesying 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. Giving full credit to God for being the only source of true insight, Joseph helps the Pharaoh to save Egypt, and things go well, both for him and Egypt. He rises to great prominence, second in command of the whole country, and the Pharaoh's power is multiplied while his people are saved from destruction. The story doesn't end there, of course. Joseph marries, has two children, but oddly, his great success, his power and fame and family, his important place in all of Egypt and his life isn't quite enough for Joseph. He misses his father, left behind in Canaan, and pines for his younger brother Benjamin, the only living reminder of his dead mother, Rachel. Joseph never expects to see his father and full brother again. He is, in a word, a bit depressed. But then, in a plot twist worthy of our finest novels, his brothers are compelled by famine to come down to Egypt to buy bread. Suddenly, the same characters who beat him and sold him into slavery are completely in Joseph's power. What an amazing opportunity for revenge. In this week's Torah portion of Miketz, Joseph seems to take advantage of that. He teases and torments his brothers. He is fully aware of their identity, and they are completely ignorant of his. It's a game of cat and mouse. Joseph seems to relish manipulating, teasing, emotionally torturing his brothers. What will happen? As the Torah portion of Miketz concludes, we are left wondering which way it'll go. Next week, we get the answer, but this week, the issue is delineated. How exactly will an assimilated Jew respond to pressure to hide his identity? Just as the Jews in the days of the Maccabees struggled with tremendous pressure to accept cultural subjugation and give up their Judaism, so too Joseph struggled with hiding his own identity or admitting it in public. No matter how prominent we may become, the pressure to assimilate, even to hide Jewish identity, can be overwhelming. In a season in which the majority culture is overwhelming us with its songs, foods, and religious trappings, we Jews today sometimes struggle to assert our own pride in our Jewish identities. May we learn the lessons of Joseph and the Maccabees that Jewish identity has to be asserted proudly and with commitment, even in the darkest of days, even in the face of a majority culture. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest, Michelle Citrin, will explore what motivates her to create terrific Jewish music, how she started making the fun and meaningful songs and settings for Jewish prayers that are her signature. Michelle will be with us when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998 and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The horror of yet another attack on innocent civilians in America with legally purchased assault rifles and large magazines was perpetrated in San Bernardino, California last week. While information on the murderers is still emerging, Saeed Farouk and Tashfeen Malik, the couple who deliberately slaughtered people at a holiday party at a center that helps students with autism, have connections to Saudi Arabia and got their guns the NRA way, buying them legally in our system that so pathetically fails to monitor the access to weapons of mass destruction by all kinds of disturbed and dangerous people. It is clear that this was a planned mass murder, but what the point of it all could possibly be is not yet evident, as though there ever was any point to such depraved and horrifying acts. In other massacre news, the mastermind of last month's ISIS Paris massacres also planned to strike Jewish targets before he was killed. The plans by Belgian national Abdelhamid Abaoud, disclosed in a confidential police witness statement that was leaked last week to a French magazine. According to witnesses, Abaoud asked his cousin Hasna Ait Boulahsen to hide him while he prepared more attacks following the multiple strikes on November 13 throughout Paris that killed at least 130 people and wounded hundreds more. The attacks would have next targeted the Jewish community, the education system, and the transportation system in Paris. Abaoud told his cousin back on November 15 that the new attacks would do worse damage in districts close to the Jews and would disrupt transport and schools. He also reportedly asked his cousin to buy two suits and two pairs of shoes for him and an accomplice so they could blend in the commercial district that he would target next. Abaoud and Boulahsen died November 18th in a shootout with police in Saint-Denis, a northern suburb of Paris. In more positive news, the Attorney General's office in Israel has ordered the rabbi of the Western Wall to include women in the annual national candlelighting ceremony for Hanukkah at the Kotel. Preventing women from participating in national ceremonies is wrongful discrimination. We request that you ensure this fact is not taken for granted and that steps are being taken to include women in the national candlelighting ceremony on this coming Hanukkah at the Western Wall, Assistant Attorney General Dana Zilber wrote to Rabbi Shmuel Rabinowitz, administrator of the Kotel, Western Wall, and the Holy Places. The letter came in response to a campaign by the Women of the Wall organization that claimed the state-sponsored exclusion of women from the national Hanukkah ceremony at the Kotel, the Western Wall, is discrimination and a violation of government regulations banning discrimination in the public sphere in Israel. Women of the Wall were the match that ignited the flame on the first candle ever lit by a woman at the national Hanukkah ceremony at the Kotel, said Anat Hoffman, Women of the Wall chair and a past guest of Two Jewish. It is clear to me that one candle dispels a whole lot of darkness, but no amount of darkness can extinguish that candle. In more news, from an area about 100 feet from the Kotel, a 2,700-year-old seal impression bearing the name of a famous Judean king was uncovered in excavations at the foot of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. The discovery, announced last week, is the first seal impression of an Israelite or Judean king ever exposed during a scientific archaeological excavation. The oval seal measures 13 millimeters by 12 millimeters and says, belonging to Hezekiah, son of Ahaz, king of Judah. It includes the image of a two-winged sun with wings turned outward, flanked by two Ankh symbols symbolizing life. Hezekiah was the great Judean king from 727 BCE to 698 BCE, when Judah managed to resist the Assyrian Empire's invasion. The Ophel excavations at the foot of the southern wall of the Temple Mount are conducted by Hebrew University of Jerusalem's Institute of Archaeology under the direction of Dr. Eilat Mazar. The seal impression was found along with 33 additional bullae imprinted from other seals, some bearing Hebrew names. The reverse showing marks of coarse fabric and cords that probably sealed sacks containing food. They were discovered in a refuse dump dated to the time of King Hezekiah, that is, 8th century BCE trash, or shortly thereafter, and they originated in the royal building that stood next to the Temple Mount and appears to have been used to store food. This building, one of a series of structures that included a gatehouse and towers, was constructed in the second half of the 10th century BCE, the time of King Solomon, as part of the fortifications of the Ophel, the new governmental quarter, built in the area connecting the city of David with the Temple Mount. You know, the same Temple Mount that the Palestinians are falsely claiming had no Jews anywhere near it in ancient times, except for King Hezekiah 2,700 years ago. And, of course, lots and lots of Jews, both before and after. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Michelle Citrin, one of the really energetic but also extremely talented young performers in Jewish music today, and who integrates a variety of different styles but also is genuinely funny.
Thank you.
So, have you always been funny?
Have I always been funny? I think I was obnoxious for a really long time because I think I wanted to be funny, but I didn't understand timing, and I thought if I just sort of kept repeating myself, it would eventually come through. So no, I don't think I was. I think I was an annoying younger sister. So, you know, to my
it's
older
always
sister.
The younger.
It's always kids. The younger one. We just want to be heard, you know, and we want to be liked and loved, just like anyone else, but especially the secondborns. So I don't know if I was always funny, but I know I was always been like a goofball. Like I have a very distinct memory of going on long family road trips, and my role in the car was to basically find whatever we had in the car props wise for example, a pair of 60s orange enormous goggles, put them on my face, look outside the window, find some car to connect with, and just make ridiculous faces. And if they laughed, it was a point. And we would see how many points we could collect by making ridiculous faces. And really what that was connecting with people and making them laugh, to me, was such a cool thing.
And imagine if you had had an iPhone in those days to play on, you never would have had that experience. You
it's
might not
so
be a performer
true.
Today.
It is so, so true. And I'm hoping that the desire for connection and you know, for people will translate even with the phones. And they'll just be doing it through apps like Dub Smash, where you're dubbing sounds and video and sharing it. I think the essence of the desire to connect is still there. It's just changing the interface, you know?
Expressed in a different way.
Yeah.
When you write a song, do you... And if it's not liturgy, if you're not setting a piece of prayer to music... do you write the words first? Do you write the music first?
I think there's two ways of approaching the writing for me. I find there's two ways to go. Sometimes there's this muse, right, that just a little angel of a muse just visits my head, drops off a melody, and then I try to hang on and listen as much as I can and record it quickly on a voice memo on my phone just to, like, allow it through and not be in the way of receiving. That's like a divine intervention. That's like songwriting
number
one.
It's a Buck Hole, actually.
Yeah.
Divine
and so
voice.
It's a divine voice. I mean, it's crazy to say that, but I do think it is. I think it's a gift, and I think it's about getting out of the way and receiving that gift that's really just for other people. Being a vessel was one way. It's my favorite way because it's like so from someplace else, you know, and that's incredible. So that's one way, and then I'll take that and build on it, which is a very difficult thing to do because it starts out with this message and then you have to sort of be like cerebral about it and then try to add. So that's one way. The other way is just a really intentional, I want to write a song about this, and not moving from like the piano bench where I do a lot of composition, and really being dedicated to it and carving out time. And I've been trying to do that a lot more frequently, because I think it's the key. It's, you know, I once got a great piece of advice: the secret to writing is writing.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so true. Just give yourself 5 minutes a day and dedicate it, because before you know it, you have a lot to say. You really do.
Who influenced you the most? Which musicians, artists influenced you the most?
I adore Joni Mitchell. Queen was huge. I was really into classic rock. Those are my roots. Classic rock and folk. So the harmonies of the Indigo Girls, I would say, were really influential, and the honesty and the insight and the wit. Queen, The Doors, Cream, you know, just
Cream.
Just classic rock, a lot of soulful, funky pop. World music is huge for me. Listening to Bob Marley. I like global rhythms. You know, I went to South Africa, picked up those souvenirs, Paul Simon Graceland, all that stuff. Just anything worldly and groove related, I really, really love seeping into music.
What would you like to do that you haven't yet been able to do musically?
Oh, well, the vision that just popped into my head when you said that is again, we were talking about arrangements. I'm so in love with symphony, and I've always had that dream of taking a song of mine that I know very well in the way that it exists as like a guitar and bass drum keys, and I would love to take a song and play with a symphony and hear the arrangements, because I hear all of that in my head.
Sure.
But I'm not a trained musician. I did not go to school to learn to be literate in music, and so for me to ever get to that point, it would be a really big learning curve to like write out all those charts and to figure that, but I hear it all in my head. So I hear like a symphony. I would love to perform the symphony.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. As a cantor, you know, you sing alone a lot, mm-hmm. or with an accompanist, mm-hmm. and I've sung with symphonies, and it's a fantastic experience with a choir and a symphony. The challenge is it's so disciplined. And, you know, it has to sound free, but it's not free at all. You have too many people that are all connected to you.
You have to be really, this is what's happening, and there's no freedom in that. And as a live performer, I change things all the time. The structure of the song, thank God I play with a band that can just roll, you know, and they just know telepathically. But yes, that would be a great challenge.
Who do you like in today's music world, Jewish music world?
Oh, everybody is, there's so many. And I think that would be my answer, is that it's so incredible that there are so many names. I was looking at the Oy Songs table when I was at the Biennial, and that's a gathering of many, many Jews. Like the
Lots
mothership.
Of Reformed Jews and some not so Reformed Jews.
Right, right, everybody. And I was just looking at how many artists there were, and what a cool thing to see, because you know, for the past 8 years, I've just watched these names grow. And that is really what I would say is exciting. The fact that there's so many. I couldn't tell you just one. There's tons that are happening right now.
It's also interesting how democratic music has become. You know, you can record for far less than you used to have to spend to record.
Yeah.
And you can market it yourself and have MP3s available. And so lots more music, I think, is available now than has ever been available.
Absolutely. And the ability to share those melodies.
Yeah.
Via social media. In one day, you could have a million people hear song that you wrote last night.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's really power to the people, like when it comes to sharing these days. It's phenomenal.
Michelle, where can people go to find more of your music and buy your new album?
Ah, so you can go to michellecitrin.com, and that is two L's in Michelle, and CITRIN.com. And the album will be available on things like iTunes and Amazon and CD Baby. Come say hi.
And everywhere music is sold. I want to thank Michelle Citrin for a great visit here on Too Jewish.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun.
It's a pleasure. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Robert Bank, the incoming president of American Jewish World Service. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish for the holiday of Hanukkah, which starts at sundown tonight, comes from a unique group called Dap Kings, which backed the late, great Amy Winehouse on many of her songs. It's an R&B tune called 8 Days of Hanukkah. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a Chag Orim Sameach, a happy holiday of Hanukkah, Chag Hanukkah Sameach, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
Burn and burn.
Day two.
Time to spin the cradle and hope that Kimbo shows up on my turn.
Day three.
Fry a bunch of latkes with applesauce, sour cream and all.
Day four.
We're cooking up the brisket. The kosher butcher sold my uncle's store.